Short but difficult daf today. So you have to have all your faculties with you. because it's difficult, I'll lay out. There's two sugyas. We'll lay out one each at a time, and then we'll give a framework. So that way, at least when we're reading it, we know what we're trying to accomplish. We started one sugya yesterday, and then in the middle of today's daf is another sugya. So the first sugya relates to how do we deal with the fact in the Mishnah that the burden of proof switches. That in one instance, the burden of proof is on the father, right? And in one instance, the burden of proof is on the husband. So the Gemara needs to reconcile why in the Mishnah, these two sections, the Reisha and the Seifa, in one section, it's the, when it's before the Erusin, right, it's the father's burden of proof. And if it's after he was Kotsa, then it's the husband's burden of proof.
Before the Erusin?
If it's before, if he can prove that the mum was prior to the erusin, right, then the father's burden of proof. Mm-hmm. Right, so this is, we just read the mission if you want quickly. It's hayuba mumim va'oda beveta viha. She has mumim and she's still in her father's house. Avzarach lavi raya shemishin nit arsa hayabu mumim alalo. He has to prove that after erusin, these mumim came into existence. Right? V'nistach sadehu. And that's, it was his bad luck. Once she's in the Rishus of the Baal, he has to prove that what? Prior to the Rusin, there were these mayims. That his the whole thing was a mistake because the mumim existed, pre-existed his kiddushin with her. So Gemara wants to know, how do we reconcile the fact that this burden of proof is shifted, right? Why shouldn't it be that the burden of proof is always with the father? Or why isn't the burden of proof always with the husband? What is her changing locations, right? Why does her changing where she is affect the burden of proof? So the Gemara is going to give three answers to this. We're going to give three answers to this Mishnah. Right? There's the first answer, which we actually dealt with yesterday. Mishashanazu lo shanazu tavra. The Mishnah is broken, and it's two opinions in the Mishnah. It's actually not a single author to the Mishnah, but it's a dual author to the Mishnah. Obviously, the deficits in that explanation would be that. It's always hard. We never want to say that about a Mishnah, that there's not a single clear entity in the Mishnah. And number two, the deficit is that we actually paskin like one of those sides, right? We're going to show it's a machlokas, Rabbi Shua and Rabbi Gamliel. And in that machlokas between Rabbi Shua and Rabbi Gamliel, we paskin like Rabbi Gamliel. So therefore, the deficit in explaining the Mishnah, or explaining the two ends of the Mishnah as being two different authors. One is that the first deficit is that we're not going like Rabbi Gamliel, who the halacha is like. And number two is that we generally don't like to have the Mishnah be multiple authors, where the two sides of the Mishnah actually are not giving the same halachic opinion. It's now or consistent halachic opinion. So because of that, there are two other attempts to explain our Mishnah. Right? One attempt is by Rava, and the other attempt is by Rav Ashi. And what they both do is they try to explain the Mishnah according to Rabbi Gamliel. Because the halacha is like Rabbi Gamliel, therefore what? They tried to explain the Mishnah according to Rabbi Gamliel. So we'll start quickly. Out of the Mishnah, we're gonna start on Ayin Hei Amud Bet. We're just going back because it's a tough sugya, so I just wanted to give an overview of the sugya and then go through each of the opinions. Alright, so the first answer, again, we're trying to reconcile the Mishnah. Mishnah has two sides to it. The Mishnah has a side that there's a burden of proof of the father, and the other side is that it's a burden of proof on the husband. Gemara wants to know, why does that change? Why should the burden of proof shift? So the first answer the Gemara gives is Tavra Misha Shanazu Lo Shanazu. We have two opinions, Rabbi Gamliel's opinion and Rabbi Yeshua's opinion. Rabbi Gamliel and Rabbi Yeshua are actually arguing a different case, not related to our case, but a case where this woman is found to have that, it has lost her Besulim, right? And now the question is, what is her Chazakah? She claims what? That it happened after Heirusin. She claims that it happens after Erusin, and therefore she was raped after she got had kiddushin, or after they had after the husband had asked her to marry him, and then she can make the claim that it's your, that's your fault. I mean, it's in your bad luck, basically. He claims no, that either she did it willingly, or, and therefore it's not a rape, and therefore she's out of Ksuba, or that it happened prior to him ever getting married to her, and therefore it's possibly a Mekach Tos, right? There was a mistake. So that Machlokis comes down to Rabbi Shua and Rabbi Gamliel. Rabbi Shua and Rabbi Gamliel argue over there, who do we believe? Do we believe her? Who's the burden of proof on? Is the burden of proof on her or on the husband? And that depends on two chazakas over there. You have one chazaka, which is what? Chazkas haguf. In general, her chazaka is that her body is intact and that she's a psula. That's one chazaka. The other chazaka is what? That chazkas hamamon. Where's the money sitting right now? The money is sitting with the husband, right? Because he's the one who's going to have to pay out the ksuba. If there's a failure in the marriage and he says, I want her out of here, and she says, what happened under your watch? I mean, I got raped while we were married, then she's entitled to her ksuba. So the money's with him. So we have a cheskas mamon versus the cheskas aguf. And that's what they argue about. So Rabbi Gamliel says that we go batar cheskas aguf. The cheskas aguf dictates, and therefore the burner proof is going to be on the husband. She's nemenet. She's believed. And the Rabbi Yeshua says, no. The lo mi pi anu chayim. Lo mi pi anu chayim. We don't live by her word, meaning that the cheskas mamon takes precedence, and the burner proof will be on her. So that's how they explain our Mishnah. That's the first answer of the Gemara to explain our Mishnah. What is that? One place we say the burden of proof is on the father or on the girl. And the other side we say the burden of proof is on the husband. That's where it says that's two different authors to the Mishnah. So what, the part of the Mishnah that says that what the burden of proof is on the husband, who's that like? That's like Rabbi Gamliel. So that's Rabbi Gamliel, weren't that half of the Mishnah. The other half of the Mishnah is what? That if the burden of proof is on the father or on the daughter. Right, that part of the Mishnah is being learned by who? By Rabbi Yehoshua, who says that the Cheskas Mamon dictates, and therefore what? The two cases. They would agree, even Rabbi, therefore in the opposite cases, even Rabbi Yeshua, who believes what? Rabbi Yeshua believes that the Cheskas Mamon dictates, is even after she's in the possession of the husband. I mean that even after she switches from the possession of the father to the possession of the husband, he's going to continue to say what? The burden of proof is still on the father. Right? Whereas, and then the Rabbi Gamliel, where in the second half of the Mishnah, where it says the burden of proof is on the father, he's going to say that even, where the burden of proof is on the husband, he's going to say that even when she's in the possession of the father. So again, that's the difficulty in the Mishnah, when you explain it that way, is what? You have two inconsistent opinions, and if you asked each opinion individually, they would say their opinion even in the first case, or even in the second case, so they're not matched. So that's the first attempt of the Gemara to reconcile the Mishnah. The second attempt by the Gemara is going to be by Rova. Rova is going to try to explain the Mishnah. Now Rova is going to explain the Mishnah according to Rabbi Gamliel. Again, we pass in the halacha like Rabbi Gamliel that she is nemenet, that the cheskas haguf takes precedence. If the cheskas haguf takes precedence, then what? Then whose has the burden of proof? The burden of proof is on the husband. So now, if that's the case, the burden of proof is on the husband, now we have to explain the other side. Why is it that there's a position where what? Where the father has a burden of proof? That's the next line in the Gemara. So we go Rava Amar. That's like about midway through the daf. When I and Hey, I'm at Bet. Rava Amar. Reisha kan nimtzu v'kan hayu. Seifanami kan nimtzu v'kan hayu. So that's it. He says Rava basically says what? Wherever the mom is found, right? Wherever we find out about the mom, that's where we assume it was. It happened. So therefore, he's saying what the burden of proof has to do with location. If it's found while she's living in her father's house, we find the mum there, we assume that's where it transpired. I mean, the mum took place in her father's house prior to the Kiddushin, and therefore the burden of proof is going to be on the father. Whereas when she's in her husband's house, we're going to assume what? That's where we found it, that's where it happened, or it happened after Erusin, and therefore it's the husband's bad luck. And if it's the husband's bad luck, the burden of proof is going to be on the husband. So that's how he explains our Mishnah. The Mishnah, when we change locus, right, when we move from father's house to the husband's house, that's why the burden of proof shifts. Because there's an underlying assumption that wherever we find it, that's where it transpired. Right? So that's Rava's opinion. Second way to explain our Mishnah, Rava. So we had the first one, Tavra Mishashana Zoloshana Zoo. Second attempt is this Rava's opinion. Now the Gemara is going to challenge Rava. Until midway through the next Amud, Gemara is going to deal with Rava's opinion. All right, so just keep in mind, this is Rava's opinion. The Gemara is either challenging this or going to support his opinion, explain why his opinion works. So the first one, 8th Ve'abaya, we challenge Rova's opinion. What's that? Nichnasu l'rishus habal, habal tzarech l'aviraya, ad shelo tit'ares hayu ba'mumim. Once she comes into the possession of the husband has to bring a proof that what? Ad shelo tit'ares. Before he ever had kiddushin, they were these minyan. These were these mumims. Hayu ba'mumim ilu. Ayo mechul mechul tos. And if the whole underlying kiddushin was a failure because it was premised on faulty, right, information. So the Gemara Abaye says, Achlo titares in Mishat titares flow. If he proves that it was before the Kedushin, that works. But if he only proves what, that it was after Kedushin, but before she came into his possession, it doesn't work. Vamai. Why is that the case? Lema kan nimtzu'u b'kanayu. According to Rava, wherever she is, wherever the locus is of her, right, her locus is, then what we assume what? That's where it happened. So all the husband should have to do is prove what? That the mum was there prior to her coming to his house. Right? Yet, what's the Mishnah asking you to do? The Mishnah is saying he has to prove that it's even before Kedushin, before Erusin. Why should he have to go according to Rava? That doesn't make any sense. So that's the challenge of Rava's opinions. Amalei. So what? This is now we're going to answer Abaye's question, and this is going to refine Rava's opinion. Amalei Mishnah nit arsa mishum deika lemeimar. Why does he have to prove? Why does he have to prove that it's before Erusin and not after Erusin? Because if you only prove that it was after Erusin, we have a chazaka. What's this chazaka? Ein adam shoteh bekos elim kein bodko. That a person does not drink from his kos. I mean, he doesn't take a woman unless he's checked her out. I mean, he's got to check her out first. V'hai ro'o v'nefayesu. He knew about it. He had knowledge of it, and he accepted the woman the way she was. So even though you're right, there was this mum there prior, but the fact that he married her means that what? He knew about it and he accepted it. He overcame that issue. So as ihachi. That's the case. Then why, if you're saying that what, after Erusin, he has to prove that it's all the way before Erusin, because after Erusin we assume he checked her out, or after Erusin we assume he checked her out, and they accepted it. So he's got to prove that it's so long ago that it what is a problem. So Christ says, well, who cares when it happened now? If the whole assumption now of a chazak is what? That a person will never accept, that a person, once he sees a mum, and we assume then he's accepted it once he marries her, why should it marry? Why should it matter when the mum transpired? Why should it matter when it happened? It should be irrelevant. It was before Erusin, after Erusin. As long as this guy gets, he accepted her. That's it. It's done. El Amrinan, we have a competing chazaka. Chazaka in adam efayis b'mumim. A person does not overcome mumim. So another chazaka. What a general chazaka that what? A person when there's a mum cannot. You can't handle it. It's not. There's no way that a person will marry a woman with these types of mumim in it. If they have these mumim, we automatically assume that he would, had he known about it, he would never have agreed to it. Right? So that's, so Mara says, well, chachanami. That's the case then, even after Erusin, say the same thing, right? Even after Erusin, say chazak in adam afayis b'mumim. So Ella, so now you have to explain, right? We have two, now we have two competing chazakot, and we have to deal with this. One chazaka is that if once a person's married, he must have checked the woman out, and he accepted the woman the way she was. If another competing chazaka is that what? A person would never, had he known about a mum, he would never accept it. That's the two chazakas. You have competing chazakot, and therefore basically we're back to square one. Abaye's question is, why should it be there's a difference? Why does he have to prove that it's before Erusin rather than after Erusin? So that's what the Gemara is going to come up and show, that before Erusin versus after Erusin, there's a different set of shikulim here. There's a different balances. What's that? So Gemara says here, Ella, Mishin it arso, once she is engaged, Mishum de ike tarte, you have two chazakos. What's that? Chazaka hemed guf al chazkato. So again, this is Rabbi Gamliel who says what? Chazkas guf takes precedence over here. So therefore, what? Her chazaka is that when her chazkas guf is what? That she was, her status is the way she was. Right? She didn't have any mumim. The assumption is what? If you can only prove the mumim happens after Erusin, then our assumption is that prior to Erusin, or at the time of Erusin, there were no mumim. Because she has a chezkas a guf, that she has a, what? She's a shlema. So therefore, what? That's one thing in her favor. Second thing in her favor is, what? Chazaka in adam shote bekos elim kein bodko. Right? That a person will not take a woman unless he checked her out. And therefore, if the mumim are here, he saw them and he accepted them. So that's two in her favor. Bahai, rov and ifayiso, and he accepted that. He accepted them. So my Amart, you said chazaka in adam afayis b'mumim. We have on the other side for the husband's benefit, we have that, the chazaka of what? In adam afayis b'mumim. That the person doesn't accept mumim. That if he knew about it, he would never accept it. So then we say, Gemara says, you have two chazakas in her favor, one chazaka in his favor, that trumps, she wins. Right? So that's why after a rusin, it's not sufficient for him to prove that the mum was there after Erusin, once she's in his possession. Once she's in his possession, it's not, the burden of proof is on him to show that it was prior to Erusin even. Why? Because after Erusin, you still have two chazaka versus one chazaka, and two chazaka versus one chazaka is in favor of the woman.
So the rubber thing goes away. I mean, that happened in the place. The makom, whatever it is. That, the second answer sort of goes away based on this thing.
It's not. So I mean, it's still true. Kan nimtzu u kan hayu.
Yeah, but you don't need it. It doesn't play any role. Forget about kan nimtzu u kan.
It will once like for instance, if it finds it while she's still with the father's house.
Even after
Erusin, if she's in the father's possession, then we say kan hayu kan nimtzu u, right? And the burden of proof is going to be on the father to show what happened after Erusin.
If it happened
in the father's house. Right. She's still in her father's house, and they find a mom after Erusin. The burden of proof is going to still be on the father.
Maybe we have two chazakas. One chazaka that he would have checked out, another chazaka he would never agree.
No, but the problem is you can't say the chazaka bodko because he didn't take her into her house. Right. So there we only have. So there the father's going. The burden of proof is going to be on the father because we say kana you come nim too.
Chazaka bodko is when he's taking her into the house or when he's posing to.
Right, so that's a good question. Right, so if you look,
if he's going by the mikvah, by the
right. Tosfos mentions in one place that it's a chazaka. When we say that in Adam Shota Koso is once in Nisuin, I think, at the time in Nisuin.
Why would it be the same also for everything?
Yeah, but the question is, what does that mean? That he didn't check her out? Can he really check her out by the time of Erusin? Erusin's done as a transaction, as a blind transaction, in a sense. The time of Nisuin, then already he's checked her out.
What's the chazak and Adam, you know, doesn't agree to mum? I mean, what kind of chazak is that? The proof is women with mumim are married.
No, but the point is that had he known about it, he wouldn't have accepted it. I mean, it's fine. If someone knows about it and they accept it, that's fine.
So
but our underlying, we have two problems here. We don't know when he knew about it. Right?
So they're saying that Chazaka is that a person, if he knows about a woman, he wouldn't get married. So that means women from with a few correlation would be that women from women do not get married.
Yeah, unless he explicitly states otherwise, then we assume that he wouldn't have accepted it. I mean, had he known about it, we can't say that he was defiant.
Any woman has a mum, you know, whatever the mum is, right. Has to be the husband said, I know you have a mum and I'm getting married.
Or it has to be an obvious mum. There are different types of mum, meaning that if it's a mum that's so obvious, these are mum we're talking about that are not so obvious. They're not upfront.
Why don't you say also for an obvious mum that the person's not mochel?
No, because then he saw it.
But also here he said that we assume that he knew that even if he knew it, he wouldn't agree to it because he's not mocha. That's what he said.
No, had he known about it,
right?
Not that he knew about it. Had he known about it, he wouldn't have agreed to it. That's the point. So the point is that he doesn't know about it. If he does know for sure about it, then he can't make a claim. He has no claim. If he knows about the mum, he has no claim because then he can't say it's mechal toes.
Sounds like a person doesn't agree with mum will never be mocha.
No,
if he knew about it, he wouldn't be mocha.
No, it means that if had he known, he can make a claim. Had I known about it, I wouldn't have accepted it. That's the claim. It's not that if he knows about it and then he gets married anyway, that's clear mechila. That's a clearly mechias.
Right. I mean, more so it sounds like person doesn't.
Okay, so let's go. So Rava, all right. So now you have. So Rava's opinion is chayim makom tarte. I will point out, just so you know, that there should be a chazak. There should be a second chazak in favor of the husband. What's that? Cheskas hamamon, right? Because he has the ksuba in his hands, right? So he should have cheskas hamamon. It should be two against two. So Rashi asks, the Tosfos asks it, but basically Rashi's answer, which is important, is that we're going like Rabbi Gamliel, and when you have Cheskas Aguf and Cheskas Amamon, Cheskas Amamon is irrelevant. So that's the whole point. Cheskas Amamon is not relevant according to Rabbi Gamliel when there is a Cheskas Aguf. So if you look at the first Rashi, that's what he says.
That's the beauty of Rabbi's Teretz, because of Rabbi's Pshat, because he holds that it's all the same author.
Right. That's the advantage of using Rabbi. Right, so now the challenge in Rava's opinion was why should it be, the cutoff point should have been the switch between the father's house and the husband's house. The fact is when she's in the husband's house, that he has to prove all the way back to the beginning before Erusin, that's the weakness in his opinion. He explains that that's because we have competing chazakot, and once she's in the husband's house, the competing chazakot, what make it that there's still an advantage to the woman until you can get it before Erusin. That's how he answers that. Look at the first Rashi quickly. Because that should be two in favor of the husband. That's the opinion of Gamliel, that when you have cheskas aguf, cheskas hamamon is what? Irrelevant. All right, now, so now, if it's before she had erusin, if it's before the Erusin, you can't say, put the Cheskas Aguf here. Why? Because he's proven, he has Eidim, that what? She had a mum prior to the Erusin. If he has that, then the Cheskas Aguf is gone. Because she can't make a claim, oh, I was a Shlema, I'm born a Shlema, as you go through. We know that she had a mum at the time of the Erusin. So now, Ma'ika, now you have two competing Chazak. Chazak ain't Adam Shota Bekozel and Kain Bodko. You have the one side is what? That he wouldn't have married her unless, he wouldn't have taken her unless he checked her out. V'hai rab nifaisu, and he saw it and it was good. Ad rabba, chazak ein adam nifais b'mumin. Heben mumin ochazka. So, person's not, what? He would not accept a mum. If he had known about it, he wouldn't have accepted it. And therefore what? Hemon mumin ochazkasko. Leave the mumin where it is. The mumin's with the husband now. And amotzi mechaveir olavaraya. Now the burner proof is going to be on the father to take the money out. So that's Rava's opinion. Okay, Rava explains the Mishnah quickly. He's using Rabbi Gamliel's opinion. What's Rabbi Gamliel's opinion? That whenever there's chesed aguf, the chesed mamon is irrelevant. So the chesed aguf is very important here. What do we determine the chesed aguf by? Her location. If she's in the father's house, we assume what? That the mum was always there. It happened in the father's house. It was always there. It was there prior to kiddushin, and therefore it's a kiddushin taos. If she's in the husband's house, we assume it happened in the husband's house after erusin, and therefore the burden of proof is going to be on the husband. The only little issue we had was that, well, once the burden of proof is on the husband, why does he have to move? Why does he have to prove it happened prior to the erusin? Why can't he just show it was in the father's house after erusin, and then we can go back to it was there? So we said that depends on the chazakot. Right, if before erusin, all the way before erusin, there's one and one. What is that? One chazaka that she says you knew about it and you would have accepted it, right? Because you got married to me. The other chazaka is that a person would, if he knows about mumim, would not accept those mumim, right? So those two compete. They drop away. The money is with the husband, so the father is going to have to bring a burden of proof. But if he can only prove that the mum was there after erusin, once she's in the husband's house, only prove it's after erusin, then the wife has a much stronger claim. She says hemad gufo chazkaso. My body was a shlema until that point. You have no proof afterwards. That means at the time of kiddushin, I was also no moment. The moment happened afterwards. It happened when it was in your possession, and that's your problem now. So now she has one in her favor. Second thing is in her favor is that he wouldn't have married her unless he knew about. If he knows about the moment, he would have checked her out and he accepted it. Right, so that's two in her favor. One in his favor is that people, if they know about women, would not accept them. Two against one, that's in her favor. And therefore, it's not enough for the husband to prove it was after Erusin, but all the way before Erusin. That's Rava. Next, the third attempt at answering the Mishnah is from Rava Ashi. So Rava Ashi, again, is holding like Rabbi Gamliel, that Cheskes HaGuf dictates. Rava Ashi Amar, Reisha Mona L'Abu B'Yodach, B'Yodcho, Seifa Mona Li B'Yodach. Question is who's making the claim here? All right, because that's important. When a woman gets married, right, or a father marries off a woman, if they get divorced from erusin, right, the ksuba belongs to the father. If they get divorced from nisuin, the ksuba belongs to the wife, to the woman. So the question is, what are we talking about, right? If we're talking about, right, when she's still in the father's house and then they get divorced, who's making the monetary claim? If she's still in the father's house and they get divorced, who's coming to claim the ksuba? That is who? The father, right? The father is coming to make the claim of the ksuba because she's only an arusa, right? She hasn't been nisuin yet. She hasn't left her father's possession yet. And therefore, if they get divorced, who's entitled to the kesef ksuba? That is the father. So what? The father is the one making the claim. If she's already in her husband's house, she's in the husband's house, then when they come to get divorced, who's claiming the ksuba? The ksuba is being claimed by whom? By the woman. The woman's coming to make the claim. Why does it make a difference who's making the claim? Right. Right. Well, it depends on cheskas aguf. Right. The cheskas aguf, we only say that someone has a chazaka with their body when they're making a claim on themselves. You can't say when somebody's making a claim on a third party, they can't say, oh, they have a cheskas aguf. That's not a fair claim, because that's the difference between saying manil abba biyodech. That's the equivalent of somebody going, say, you owe me $100, but what? It was my father lent you $100 and you owe me the money. Right. Manil abba biyodech. Or what? Now, money li biyodech. Right. My father, or I say, I lent you $100. If I say, I lent you $100, I'm making an embargo claim. I'm making an absolute claim that what you owe me $100. Whereas if I say, my father lent you $100 and you owe me $100, right? My lab, I don't have a clear claim because it's not my claim. I'm making a claim on behalf of my father. So that's the same thing here.
Is there ever a situation where you can claim a goof on another party, like, for instance, your wife or something? There's separation between two people.
Right. Oh, it depends. I guess it depends what the claim is. But yeah, generally here it's very important because cheskas aguf is a very personal, right, claim. To make a bari claim of cheskas aguf when the mum was there is a very personal claim, and therefore you can't. I think no matter who it was, can make that claim of bari, right, is only open to the person who they themselves is making the claim. In monetary means, maybe there is a claim that you can make if, where this type card is.
And there's a logic to it, because the chazakah is not just, it's not a fact that because you have chazakah, It has to come with her time. I mean, if she said, if she admitted, she said, no, you know, I got to be honest, I have this mum from the day I was born.
Right.
So I mean, so it comes, it's proof to your position. Here, she has no position. It's the father's coming, so he shouldn't be able to use this as a proof, because it's,
right.
We don't know, you know, ask her, what does she say? She might say, yeah, she might, you know, it's not his,
right. It's not his claim. That's what Rashi reads it that way. Tosfos tries to read it as a Bari and Shema case, and then he goes back at the end, he says that the parish of Kuntrus is Zikar, that Rashi's claim is the merits. We can read
it. Yes, so it's mentioned in the Gemara that you don't own it. It's not like just it's a fact that it's a Bari that she, you know, they haven't before. It's, no, if she says that it happened to me later on,
then Chazaka is in her favor.
I don't say anything. It's not like you say, oh, you have Chazaka, check. That's
right.
It.
Right. That's fair. So look at Rashi. Look at Rashi, Rav Ashi Amar. Mahadar Nami Ukma Kula Karabi Gamliel. Right? It's the first line of the Gemara. It's right across to that. Rashi, he's trying to explain our Mishnah according to Rabbi Gamliel. The entire opinion here is Rabbi Gamliel. The Chazaka of the Gufa Adifa. That the Chazaka of the Guf overcomes the Cheskas Amamon. Why in the first case, when she's in her father's house, does it not help? It's not her claim. It's her father's claim. Because the Ketubah out of Erusin belongs to the father. It's equivalent to saying that my father lent you $100 and now you owe me $100. Right? You can't say with her body, he can't have his claim, cannot use the chazak of her goof, because it's not her claim, it's his claim. So that's how Rav Ashi explains the Gemara. The switch of location, right, switches the claimant. Right? That's what's happening here. When you switch locations, you're also switching who the plaintiff is over here to get the claimant, to get the what? The ksuba. When she's in her father's house, the claim is by the father. When she's in her husband's house, the claim is by the woman. And that's going to change whether the chetzkas goof helps you or not. Right?
He brings the rod. I guess I'm missing a part.
Bar Yibishema.
That's what he says. With Aleph. Even though that she's screaming for father,
yeah.
But it's not her time. You know, she's not part of it.
That's so the way Tosfos tried to explain it the first way, like you said, with Bari and Shema, and he rejected it, and he says that even if she makes a Bari claim,
right? That's right. Yeah, because it's not her time. So it's, I don't. You know, it's like it's right. Nice that you have proof, but you're not part of the din.
Right. Tosfos also understands what happens if the father makes a Bari claim. It's not, so he rejects in the end because it doesn't work out. And he says, like Rashi, it's all about who has the right to use this chazaka.
She has
the right to use it. The father doesn't have the right to use it. Okay, so that's how Rav Ashi explains our mission. Now, Eitu Rav Acha Bar Rav Ashi is going to challenge Rav Ashi's opinion. Mode Rabbi Meir b'mumin haruim l'voim ha-beit avia. That Rabbi Meir agrees from our Mishnah over here whether the mumim are obvious or not. Well, everybody agrees if it's a mum, that's something that can't just show up. It's a mum that obviously had to be there when she was in her father's house. That what? It's from the father to bring a proof. Vamai. Why should it be that case? Money b'liodechu. She's making the claim now. She's in Nisuin, right? And she's making a claim, right? So she has what? She's making the obvious claim. If it's her making the claim, then what? It doesn't matter that it was something that could have been there at her father's house. Because she's making a claim, she can get a chesed aguf. She can make a clear claim. And then what? So why are we assuming, right, just because it could have been something that was in her father's house, that she loses her chezkas aguf? That shouldn't work that way. I mean, if it's she's making the claim and she has the right to be mafil, this chezkas aguf, that should be enough here. So Gemara says, Hachav Mayaskinen, what's this mean that it was roy to be in her father's house? It's roy to be in his father's, it's so roy to be in her father's house that what? There's no chezkas aguf anymore. What's that? What case is that? Biyateras. So the Gemara says that where she has like an extra finger. That's not something that didn't show up all of a sudden after you got married. That was clearly there before the Erusin. Well, so now the question is what? If that's clearly there before the Erusin, what do we say? Then the burner proves on the father? I mean, what's the father going to prove now? What type of claim can the father have? What raya is he going to bring? That it wasn't there? I mean, he can't bring any proof. There's nothing that can support his position. So no, what's that? So the Gemara says, Yeseros, my raya, my sin. What's the father going to bring? What type of proof? The Gemara says, raya de rov and if I assume. He's going to bring a proof that the husband knew about it, and he accepted it. So that's what the father can do. The only thing the father can do to improve the claim for himself or for his daughter is what? Prove that the husband knew about it. If he can prove the husband knew about it, then the husband has no claim but mechatos. See, if the husband didn't know about it, the husband has a fair claim because she has a fifth finger. This was here all the time, and there's clearly a mechatos here. All right, so that's how Rav Ashi explains Rabbi Meir about haruim lavo me'avia. What does it mean that it's roi to come from a father's house? It shouldn't matter. According to Rav Ashi, it shouldn't matter. It should matter who's making the claim. So what is the father making the claim or the wife making the claim? If the wife makes the claim, she should always have an advantage. Why should it matter that it could have come from her father's house? So Rav Ashi explains to Rav Meir to say what? It has to be so obvious that there's no refuting that it came in the father's house. No refuting that it was there at the time of Kedushin. If there's no refuting it was at the time of the Kedushin, then why? What's the father have a chance at? So he says, no, he has a chance of showing that he knew about it, the husband knew about it, and therefore it was a mechatos. So again, that's the first sugya today. Hard sugya, three ways to explain the Mishnah, because we have, why is the burden of proof change when the location changes, the locus of the woman changes? One is, it doesn't really change, and it's just that we have two authors to the Mishnah, Rabbi Shimon and Gamliel, and it wouldn't change, location is irrelevant. Right? And the second chance was by Rava, that what? Wherever the location is, that's where we assume the mum happened, and therefore the burden of proof is on the one who... where the wife is in that, where the woman's in that location, because we assume it happened there, right? And the one difficulty we had with that again was between Erusin and if the one he has to prove, if it's a burden of proof on the husband, why does he have to move it all the way back to before Erusin? Then we said because it's the balance of the chazakos. Rav Ashi says no, as another location is not the issue. The issue is who's making the claim, right? Location affects who makes the claim, right? If the claim is by the father, he doesn't have the chazakos of guf supporting him. So therefore, what he is at, he doesn't have the burden of proof is therefore on him. If the claim has been made by the wife, she has the cheskas aguf supporting her. She has the cheskas aguf supporting her. Then the burden of proof is going to shift to the husband. When does the claim change? The claim changes when she changes locations. Why? Because nisuin changes who's the claimant. During erusin, who's the claimant? It's the
father.
It's the father, right? Once she hits nisuin, the claimant shifts to be the wife. And when does that happen? When she changes from her father's possession into the possession of the husband.
What does it say that the father has to bring a raya? In this case, Rav Meir, because so many after nisuin.
Right. Well, that's the whole point.
And they want to say that he has to bring a proof. If she's bringing nisua.
Oh, that's the Gemara's question. That's the challenge to Rav Ashi's position. Exactly. Rav Ashi, you shouldn't. Here you have Rabbi Meir, where she's the claimant,
right.
And yet nevertheless, we're saying the burden of proof is on the husband. So you say, oh, it's a case, right? It's a case where the mum, what? The mum should have been there prior to the father's house. The burden proof should still be on her. The wife says, no, it's a mum that's so obvious that it had to be here before the kedushin.
It says, shall Abba be right?
Yeah, because the burden, what's the case here? What's the...
But if she's in the suah already, doesn't he get out of the picture?
Right, so if the suah, why is he the one?
Because
he's the only one who can make the, he's the only one who can prove that it happened at the time of the suah. He's the one who married her off, so he has to prove that it was, he was Mekabalit. Yeah, truth is, she's the claimant, but he's the only one who's bringing the proof. Yes, because the father is the one who, only one who could bring the proof. She can't, he's the one who married her off. He has to prove that he, the husband saw it and accepted the kedushin. Right, okay. Next sugya, okay? This sugya is a very hard sugya. I'm just going to tell you now, ahead of time, it's a hard sugya. The Gemara is going to go through. The Gemara is Gemara is backwards, right? The Gemara is basically going to say that we have a sugya here in our Mishnah, right? What is this like? We have other sugyas and shots where the burden of proof is on either the buyer, the seller, right? The before or after. So we have these other sugyas and shots. Which one matches the best with our Mishnah? Okay? So that's the question. Our Mishnah has these cases. Can we use it as a proof, or can we use it as a parallel case to somewhere else in Shas where burden of proof shifts or changes? Right. So the Gemara is going to do it in a backwards way. The Gemara is going to say, bring a case down, and then say, oh, we have a Vatana Tuna Dekala, that their proof is from our Mishnah. Our proof is it's backwards. It's not saying, okay, here's our Mishnah. What's it like in other cases in Shas? The Gemara is going to say, here, we have the other cases in Shas. Bring a proof to our Mishnah, okay? And the Gemara is going to go through a number of cases in Shas where the burdens of proof are going to shift, or they're going to be burdens of proof, and they're going to try to compare it to our Mishnah. So that's just have that in mind when we're going. They're coming up. So the first case is like this: Amar Yehuda, Amar Shmuel, a machlif para b'chamor. Someone who swaps a para for chamor. That's a what? That's a. There's no money in this transaction, so it's a kinyan. There's going to be a kinyan chalip in here, where they're swapping. So what happens here? Umashach bala chamor et para. Right, so the owner of the chamor takes the para. Once he does that, what happens? The chamor then goes into the possession of who? Of the bala para. It's automatic, right? That only one of them has to make a kinyan. Once one of them makes a kinyan, the other one's, the swap is completed, and the other one goes the other way. V'lo yispik bala para l'mshoket ha-chamor ad shemesa chamor. The bala chamor, right, the bala para comes to pick up his chamor, comes to do his kinyan on his chamor, it's dead. All right? When did the chamor die? Right? He never saw the chamor. Because why? Right? The bala chamor went and took the para from the other guy. So then, did the chamor die before he made a kinyan on the para, or did it die after he made the kinyan on the para? So where it says, al-bala chamor la-vriya havi raya, it's the burden of proof is in the bala chamor to bring a proof. She chamoro kayam b'shas mishichas para. that was alive when he made the kinyan on the parah. He's got to bring the proof. But Tani Tuna Kalu. And the proof for the proof to this is what? Our Mishnah. Our Mishnah. Tana Kala. Well, actually, I don't know. We don't know what Kala. It says that. Kala is the proof. Hi, Kala. Which Kala are we talking about that's the burden proof? E Lema, if you say Kala Babeta Viha, what? That it's a Kala when she's still in her father's house. Why? When she's in her father's house, who's the burden of proof on? On the father. So to hear. The Chamor is in what? Is it where is the Chamor located? The Chamor is still located with the Bala Chamor. Therefore, the burden of proof is going to be on the Bala Chamor to show that it was alive when the transaction transpired. The Gemara says, Midami, how can you compare these cases? Over there, the father makes a claim and he's taking money. He has to, what? The burden of proof is on him. Why? Because he's trying to extract money from the husband. Here, the Bala Chamor is not trying to, what? To extract money. He's trying to keep the status quo. So how can you say they're comparable cases? Maybe the burden of proof is less when you're trying to maintain the status quo than when you're actually trying to take money from one's possession out. But how can you complain? How can you compare the case? Ah, Ella, Amaro, Abba, Kala, Bebeit Chamia.
Can you say Kala Chomer?
No, it's the other way around. The Kala Chomer is against you here. Kala Chomer is if you need a burden, if by Pura we would say what, that you need burden of proof, then certainly by the father you would need burden of proof. Why? Because in the case of Chamor, he's just trying to keep the status quo. Or the father is trying to extract money. So that would be a Kal v'chomer. The problem is that we're trying to bring a proof from our mission. So you have the other way around. We know by the father that the burden of proof is on the father, but there it's because he's trying to extract money. Maybe by the Bala Chamor, that should not be a comparable case.
If you said it by Chamor, then it would be kosher by Kala.
Right, exactly. It's the opposite. Because we only know it by Kala, we don't know it by Bala Chamor. Right. All right, Amir Abava must be Kala b'beit Chamia. It's a Kala in what? Her father-in-law's house, meaning that she's with the husband already. Right, so what? So who's the burden of proof there? The burden of proof is what? With the husband. And what's the husband trying to do? He's trying to maintain the status quo. Right? He's trying not to pay ksuba. Right? So he's trying to not pay the ksuba. So this should be a comparable case. Gemara says, Akati lo dami. Still not a good proof. Why? Hasam bal maisurayo umarole lechazke da'av. When the husband comes along and gives the burden of proof to him, he's actually ruining the chazaka of the av. Hacha balachamor maisurayo mukim chazke biyadei. He improves his standing. What's the chazakas? What are the two chazakot here? There's a by the Bala Chamor, what's the chazaka? That animals are alive in general, right? The animal was alive at one point, and the chazaka is that it's staying alive. So if he brings a proof, what's his proof? His proof is to maintain the chazaka in the way it is now, right? His proof is what? That the animal is still alive. It was alive and remains alive, so he's improving it. By Kala Beit Chamia, what's the status? The status of the woman is that she has chazkas haguf, right? Her chazak, the chazak is in her favor, right? The chazak is in her favor, right? If the chazak is in her favor, then when the Baal has to come along and uproot the chazak of the chazkas haguf, he's going to need a much stronger, the burner proof on him is much stronger because he's trying to ruin that chazak. So you can't say just because the husband has to bring a proof to ruin her chazak that the Baal HaChamor also has to bring a proof. He's bringing a proof for a different thing. The Baal is trying to wreck a chazak. Maybe the burden of proof by ruining a chazak is much higher. The threshold is much higher. And that's why he's obligated to bring the chazak. But Baal HaChamor, the chazak is in his favor, which is what? An animal is alive and it remains alive. Maybe there, the burden of proof is on the other party, right? It should be on the other party, not him. So the Gemara says, okay, so now the Gemara's got to amend it to say what? Amar Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak Kala b'beit Aviyah. We're talking about a woman in her father's house. Ah, we said before that doesn't match, but that's the kiddushin. There's two different monetary transactions here that are going on. One is what? That the father accepted kiddushin for his daughter. So the Baal gave money. Say he gave a pruta to the father in order to marry the woman. Secondly, there's an obligation of what? Of the husband to pay a ksuba. So there are two claimants here. The father is coming as a claimant to say what? I want the ksuba paid to me. The husband comes as a claimant and says what? I want my kesef kedushin back. I want my kesef kedushin back. Ah, so now what? If the kala is bebeit aviyah, she's in her father's house, and who's coming to make a claim now?
The husband.
The husband's coming to make a claim to get his kedushin back, right?
It's like
par v'chomor, right? Because what? Over there, he's trying to what? He's trying to keep the money, right? The father is trying to keep money status quo. And we still say the burden of proof is on who? On the father. Kala b'beis aviha. The burden of proof is who? On the father. So even though here the father wants to keep the Kesef Kiddushin, still the burner proof is on him. So too here, by the Bala Chamor, he wants to keep the Paro where it is, he wants to keep the status quo, the burner proof will be on him. So now we found a parallel case. That's exactly what the Gemara did here so far. We found a parallel case, which is what? By Kesef Kiddushin, we have two cases, what, where the burner proof is on the individual who wants to keep the status quo. Right? The burner proof is on the father to keep his money, the Kesef Kiddushin, and the burner proof is on the Bala Chamor to keep the Paro the way it was.
Why wasn't this explanation used earlier on to describe the difference in the Mishnah? Or does it not?
Because the husband, I mean, why don't we say in the Mishnah that it's Kesef Kiddushin, because you have to have two parallel cases, right? It doesn't help you. Because then you just have to explain, right? Meaning that the Mishnah says the burner proof shifts when the location shifts. So even if you say it's Kesef Kiddushin, right, then just when you get, it's going to end up that the burner proof is going to shift to the husband. And why does it shift? The question is, why does the burner proof shift when she shifts location? So whether the claim is Kesupa or Kiddushin doesn't matter because the burner proof is shifting, right? I mean, the cases are different. Yes, it would be different cases, but...
Yeah, but
that's already... Then you're already trying to... Right, you don't have a symmetric... Right, exactly. You don't have a parallel structure in the Mishnah, which is more difficult, right? Okay, so now... Now, in Kiddushin, there's a machlokas. There is a machlokas in Baba Basra about Kiddushin, that when you give Kesef Kiddushin, is it retractable? Meaning that when someone marries with Kesef Kiddushin, do we assume that the money's gone? And if, even if it's a mechach tos, the Kesef Kiddushin are gone, and the only claims are about the ksuba? Or do we say that even when there's a mechach tos, there's actually a transaction here, and the money gets returned? Right, so now, that'll matter in our case here. The Gemara says here, Ella, so the Gemara says, Aliba demand the mar Kiddushin lavli tibui nitnu, that when someone marries with Kiddushin, they're not given, money's not gone. That you mean you can actually get it back, then that makes sense. Then you can explain our mission that way. Ella, demand the filu demand the mar Kiddushin tibui nitnu, even according to the one who says that generally, when you give Kesef Kiddushin, it's gone, you can't get it back. Hani mili Kiddushe vadai, that's only when you have a Kiddushin that are fixed, that you know for sure. About Kiddushay Tos, Imaisiraya in Ilolo. No, but by Kiddushay Tos, when there's a Tos in the Kiddushin, then the money is extractable, because he's showing that the Kiddushin were on a failed premise. So there.
It wouldn't be true that.
Divorce. Right? That's it. The other case would be divorce. By divorce, he doesn't get his Kesef Kiddushin back. It's gone. The money's gone. But if the underlying Kiddushin were a failure, then he can say the transaction never really should have transpired, and I get my money back. Even according to the one who says in a divorce, you don't get back your Kesef Kiddushin, even in this case, would agree that you can get your Kesef Kiddushin back. What?
There's an opinion that in divorce you can get back.
Yeah, that's the machlokas between whether that's tevuin or not tevuin. So he's saying, even according to the opinion that generally you don't get your money back in a divorce, over here we'll agree that you do get your money back. All right, Meitavei. The Gemara is going to challenge this opinion that what? That you can have a chazaka like this. That if you're trying to ukim chazaka in its place, that you have to what? If you're trying to keep the status quo, that you have to bring the burner proof is on the one trying to keep the status quo. What is that? Machach nimtes uvi beta kosot. So this is a trefus, right? A trefus issue. You find a needle that's in the area of the beta kosot, which is a little before the stomach. It's a double. It's an area of the intestine. I don't know the intestine, but that's double lined. It has two linings. So therefore, mitzad echad, if the needle is only penetrated through one side, you can only see the needle on one side, then ksheira. We assume the animal is kosher because we assume it didn't penetrate the other wall, that the double layer only penetrated one of them. Mishneit stadim, if you can see the needle on both sides, then we know it penetrated both walls, and therefore what? Trefa. Nimtza lea koreit dam, if you see a drop of blood on the needle, v'yadu eshu lefnei shechita, then we know for sure it happened before shechita. Why? Because there will only be a drop of blood there. The Gemara's assumption is that shechita drains the blood from the animal. And therefore, if the needle went through after shechita, there would be no blood on the needle. The fact that there's blood on the needle is because what? It happened prior to shechita. And therefore what? It's a trefa. Lo nimtza lea koreit dam, if it has no drop of blood, then it would be dushal achar shechita. Then we know for sure it happened after shechita, because the reason there's no blood in the area is because it was drained out in the shechita. The animal's no longer alive. Huglai piyamake, if it's a scab. What happens if it's a scab? Biyadush shloshi yomim kodem shkita, right? Then you have to know, then you know for sure what that it happened 3 days before, right? There's no way that it happened now because if it's got a if it's it, the blood doesn't coagulate that fast, right? So if there's already a scab, right? This is always a problem, you know, when they bring kids in for kids to the hospital and they see that the kids have bruises on them or the kids have like scabs on them and they ask the parent, oh, how did this happen? It's, oh, he just fell, it's just that. Right, they know that a lot of times they suspect abuse because what? It's obvious that a bruise, you don't get a bruise immediately. A bruise shows up after a couple of days. You don't get, right, a scab right away. I mean, this is something that happened beforehand. It's clear that it happened, transpired before the last 24 hours. So do here. When you have a scab, it's clear that was there prior to the shechita. There's nothing to talk about. Lohu glad piyamake. Now, what happens if you don't have a scab on it? So now you have this needle that's there, and we don't know when it happened, right? So there's no scab. So now that happened. There was a sale in between. Okay, Reuben and Shimon. One sold the cow. The other Shimon afterwards goes and checks the cow. They open up the cow. There's a needle through the stomach. It's a trefa. When was it a trefa? Was it a trefa before the transaction or after the transaction? Right. So if there's a scab there, we know that it happened 3 days ago. Then we know it happened before. But if there's no scab, how do we know when the needle went through? Right. So amotzi mechavero lavaraya. Whoever the burden of proof is the one who wants to extract money. Right. So here's a butcher who bought the animal off of the farmer, right? He bought it off the farmer. So if the tabach, if the butcher already paid money for it, right? He has to bring a burden of proof, what? To get the money back. The tabach's got to prove that what? That the trefa was there prior to it. Bamai! Bala behema, laisiraya v'nokim! According to the way we're saying is to maintain the status quo, you have to bring proof. So this is like our case of bala chamor. This is like our case of kalo. Why shouldn't it be the obligation of the farmer to bring a proof to what? To keep the money. Right? If you're saying to keep the status quo, you need to bring proof. The burden of proof here also should be what? To keep the status quo. So why are we putting the obligation on the butcher to get his money back? Let the obligation be on the farmer to keep the money, right? And that would be the equivalent to the Kala case before and the case of Bala Chamor. So Gemara says, our case here is Beloyev Tav Chadami. That it's a case where what? The butcher did not pay the money yet. So the butcher didn't pay the money yet. Who's trying to get the money? The farmer is trying to get his money. So my Pascha, so Gemara says, then why do you say Amotzi Mechavero Lavaraya? The question here is not who's trying to extract the money that has the obligation. The real, it's what? It's really that the Bala Behema is chayav to bring a proof. No matter what, the Bala Behema has to bring a proof either because he's trying to extract money from the Tabach or because he wants to maintain the status quo. So what are you saying Amotzi Mechavero Lavaraya? That's not a clear case here. It's not easy to say. Don't listen to these things my brother Yehuda said. Who's his brother Yehuda? That's Amar of Yehuda, Amar Shmuel, who started out our sugya and said what? The case of Bala Chamor is comparable to the case of Kali. He says, don't listen to him. Elohachi Amar Shmuel, right? This is what Shmuel said. Kol shenolad safek v'shuto alav haraya. Wherever the suffix happened, whoever's possession the suffix happened in, that is who the burden of proof is on. Batani Tana Tuna Kala. And he brought a proof from what? Kala. So that sounds exactly like our Kala case. Wherever the Kala is, that's where the burden of proof is, right? Where did the suffix nolad? Right? If she's in her father's house and now we find a mom, the suffix is, was the mom there before or not? But it's in the house of the father. So therefore the father, burden of proof on the father. When she goes to the Baal, to the husband, right? Where was the suffix nolad? By the husband. Therefore, the burden of proof is on the husband. So too, here. By the chamor. Where was the chamor when it died? It was with the bala chamor, right? So the suffix is by the bala chamor. The obligation is going to be on him. By our case here, where is the animal? The animal is with the tabach. It's with the tabach. Yeah, yeah. So he has it already. So therefore, the suffix was nullified in his possession. He's going to have the burden of proof. So made face. The Gemara asks, machach nimtes bovi beit akosu. It brings the case of tabach. V'id loyav tabach tami. But that works well when the tabach already paid his money. And he wants to go get the money back, then it's a motzi mechaver lavaraya. It means that the tabach needs to make the claim. Bala behema b'ayle su yiraya umepik. Right then, the bala behema has to come to take out the money. Bamai sveka b'shus tabach. That's not going to work. Right? You said what? Wherever the suffix is nolad, that's who has the burden of proof is on. Over here, what? Where is the animal now? It's with the butcher. The burden of proof should be on him. Yet. If he hasn't paid yet, who do we say has to bring a proof? A Moshe Mechaber Lavaraya. The farmer has to bring the proof. That doesn't work. So Mar says, "Ramai speaks with Dara. It's Yali Da'if Tabach Tami." I mean, sorry, but it's just Tabach Kitiyali. The suffix happened when in the butcher's possession. So the Gemara says, "No, Da'if Tabach Tami." It's a case where you already paid money.
If he paid the money, then Moshe Mechaber Lavaraya. It's simple.
Yeah, but it's, if he paid the money, then the obligation's on the farmer, and that doesn't work like what we're saying. No, it's a case where he already paid his money. He's trying to get it back. So since the suffix was no light in the tabach, so Gemara says the same question. My Pascha. Who said? Then the problem is that then you should have just said it's the obligation is always on the butcher. Why are you saying Amotzi Mechavero Lavaraya? How do you know the cases where he paid the money or didn't pay the money? Why are you assuming automatically that he paid money in this case, and that's why the obligation is I am a Mutzi Mechaber Levaraya? The obligation should be what? On the one who is has it in his possession. That's the Tabak. Just say it's the Tabak's issue. So Gemara says, Tama de Milsa, the general case. The Gemara says the general case is Arakama de Lo Yavinish Sazuze Lo Yavinish Echuyuta. Nobody gives up their animal until they get paid. So the general case, that's what the Gemara is saying, the Mishnah is saying over there. What? Generally, what's the general business practice is what? That nobody gives them an animal until they pay. So what's the general business practice going to be? That the Tabach is the claimant, and he's going to be the one on Motzi Mechaber Levaraya. Who's the burden of proof on? The one who has the suffix. Who's that in this case? The Tabach. So they're going to be the same, it's the same person. Even though technically, if he hadn't given money, it would still be his obligation to bring a proof.
Isn't it different? Because the other cases we have, really, that's where the suffix started. That's where, you know, that's the one who has to bring the proof here. It happens to be, it happened by him, but it's not because of that. It's because of Motzi Mechaber Levaraya.
No. The Gemara is saying that it is because of him. He would have to bring a proof even if he didn't pay money yet. The question is, why is the Mishnah use the term Motzi Mechaber Levaraya? That shouldn't be relevant. That shouldn't be a relevant factor.
Really use it.
Right, so it uses it because the normal course of business is that the Tabach always pays money. So when you say Motzi Mechaber Levaraya, it's as if you're saying the Tabach's got to be the Raya.
But why? Because the Suffolk was born there, but it's not because
right.
The Motzi Mechaber.
Right, exactly. That's the way the Gemara is going to conclude that, right, that wherever the Suffolk is Nola, that's who the burden of proof is. Whether
that,
they want to keep it that way or whether they want to extract money.
Is
either
that,
way.
Motzi Mechaber Levaraya in the whole Shas now? Only, that means every case we know we say. Is it because the suffix is no?
Right, according to Yechezkel, that when Rami Bar Yechezkel came, that's his opinion. I'm saying this is Rami Bar Yechezkel's opinion. That means
the way we understand Amos Mechaber Levaraya is a logical thing because you want to take it out of me. It's one, you want to take it out of me.
But we don't, that's what we don't know.
It's not because that's because the suffix was born here.
No, any Amos Mechaber Levaraya works. The question is that if there's a, who's the burden of proof on, is if we know where the suffix was nola, meaning that. If there's something that happened, there's something that a dramatic event that happened. Like there are other cases where you can emotzi mechaber levaraya. We don't know where the suffix not. When I argue with you, I lent you $100. You say you didn't lend me $100. There's no issue of where the suffix was no lot.
We don't know.
Right. We just don't know, and therefore you have the emotzi mechaber levaraya. That works like normal.
Works the
These are cases where there's a chazaka that the animal that status is the way it was, and then you want to change because something happened in your possession. Something changed in your possession. You got to prove that the change happened.
We're still saying emotzi mechaber levaraya, but it's not the same as the case where we're just arguing. It's going because
we narrowed the cases where we say emotzi mechaber levaraya. We only say it where there's not a suffix no lot.
So now because that's where the suffix was no lot. That's what you have to prove, not because really Motzi Mechaber.
No. That's again, we're not reading the Mishnah. It's just happens to be that in that case, the Motzi Mechaber matches with the suffix.
Right.
That's not the reason that we're making the Bagman proof on him, right? Okay, so that's the Gemara. So again, quickly, we just had a Gemara, right? We tried to compare it to a number of cases. Just a quick chazara on this. That what? We wanted to compare our case in our Mishnah to other cases in Shas. We have two other cases in Shas. What are they? One is where you have a transaction between a Parah and a Chamor. Right, and the Bala Para already took possession of the Para, and the Chamor dies in his possession. Right, and we say the burner proof is on the Bala Chamor to show what? That the Chamor was alive when he did the transaction. The second case was what? By Treifa we said what? That the Tabach shechs it, and the burner proof is on, well, we don't know, we said Moshe B'Chaveraya, but we're going to say the burner proof is on the Tabach to show that it happened prior to his shechting it, or prior to even buying it. So that, why is that the case? Because we get down, Rami Bar Yechezkel says, and it's because wherever the suffix is Nolad, that is who the burden of proof is on. Okay, that's the basic thesis that works through all of these three cases, is that wherever the suffix is Nolad, that's where it is. I will tell you, I didn't get into it, but it's very complicated according to Rashi and according to Tosfos, who this sugya is going like. Is this sugya going like Rabbi Yeshua before? Is this sugya? Three opinions before. Is it going like Rabba? Tosfos argues it's going like Rabba. And Rashi argues that it's going like Rabbi Yeshua. Okay, I'm pointing it out to you just because that adds another layer of complication. I avoided it and I didn't deal with it, but you have to deal with those chazakos of whose opinion it's going with. I'll just do the last two lines, get us to the Mishnah, right? Very fast. Chami Amrim B'medrim B'um Mishaseiter. Arab Nachman B'nichpe, a woman who has epilepsy fits. K'mumim Shaseiter Dami. That's like a mum that you won't know about. Behind him, the Kvile Zman. That she is on a regular schedule. She has these. Fainting, epilepsy fits. Why? Because she can avoid him. She knows when it's going to happen. She can hide it from him. If it's not something that what is a fixed time on a fixed schedule, then she can't. She can be in front of him any time. If it happened, then it's like a mumshib goloi. That's as if it's obvious because there's no way he could have spent time with her and not known that she had this ailment.